Okay, so this year is Mishle Yud Chaf Gimel. Okay. Yud Chaf Gimel. And we're going to do Rashi's approach. Okay. So let's start off with the Pasuk. And I'll bring in a few Rambams, but first let's start off with the Pasuk, see if we can understand it. Okay. So the Pasuk is like this. Once again, Yud Chaf Gimel. Kischok lichzil asos zima. So like a joke to the fool is doing zima.
Perverseness.
Well, mischief, what's your interpretation?
Perverseness.
Perverseness or mischief?
I think kischok is mischief, no?
Okay, we'll go with Rashi. Rashi is Atzas Chataim.
Dullard.
No, that's Ksil. Okay, Rashi.
Oh.
Is Atzas Chataim. It means the like a sinful plan. Okay. So like a joke for the fool is to do Zima. Okay, a plan of sinning. A plan of sinners. Okay. Kischok l'ksil aso zima, like a joke to the fool. Like a joke to a fool, doing the plan of sinners. V'chachma l'ish tevuna. And wisdom is to the man of understanding. Okay, so one more time. Kischok l'ksil aso zima, like a joke to the fool. Is doing a sinful plan. V'chach malish tfuna, and wisdom to the man of understanding. Okay. So before we turn to Rashi, we're using Rashi for the translation, but...
Is this an analogy?
Yeah, there's an analogy going on. Just like to the fool... I mean, I don't want to bias the interpretation, but that's certainly one way you're going to go. I'm going to go that way also. Is that just like to the fool, it's a joke to do sinful plans or to have sinful plans. So too is wisdom to the man of understanding. Yeah, go ahead.
Meaning it's easy on both of them?
That's how Rashi's going to interpret it. Yeah, go ahead. You want to develop that or?
No, I'm saying.
Yeah, yes. Like it's a joke. It's a joke for him. That's one way to go. It could be I'm already biasing the interpretation by my translation. Part of the problem with Mishle is how do you translate the Pasuk?
Okay.
So I'm already coming in with, you could say laughter and it wouldn't be as obvious. But,
the Rashi says
Kalibino. So let's read Rashi. Unless you guys want to, let's read Rashi and then we'll give you a shot. Because in the translation of the pasuk itself, you're already offering an interpretation. So, might as well jump to Rashi here. So Rashi is like this: Kitzchok l'ksil aso zima, atzas chataim. So atza eitzah is like the plan, atzas chataim, sinner's plans of a sinner. The chachma kitzchok l'ish tuna. So wisdom is like a joke to the understanding person. Kelomar, what does it mean? Wisdom is like a joke to the man of understanding. Kelomar, kali beinav lasos. It's easy in his eyes to do. Okay, so just like atzas chatayim, zima, a sinful plan, is a joke in the eyes of the fool, so too is chachma for the understanding person. It's easy to do. Okay. So any ideas on what the concept is trying to tell us? What does understanding mean?
Understanding what? In general?
Like, yeah.
Being an understanding person?
I mean, in general... I think a lot of Rishonim, I think Rashi goes with this, or Ben Yonah goes with this, maybe even Suda, is that Chachma is like the knowledge and wisdom that you learn from other people. And Tvuna means a person who's able to derive new ideas from that which he's been taught. So like there's wisdom and understanding. And Chachma is, you go to like books, a guy learns from books, he learns from his Rebbeim. There's a lot of knowledge and wisdom out there, and you pick it up, and you learn about it from others, wisdom of the world. But then Tvuna is a person's ability to be creative and gain new insight through comparing different things and combining different things. That's generally how it's used.
So understanding is a part of that guy's nature?
For the understanding man, yeah, that's who he is. He's Ish Tvuna. He's a guy, a man with deep understanding. I mean, Tvuna is like a higher level than Chachma.
Oh, really?
I think there's a Rashi in the Chumash somewhere, which compares it to Chachma. Maybe it's by Bezalel.
But wait, it seems in the passage, Chachma like Ish Tvuna, like. How do you translate that? And wisdom
to the understanding person.
It seems like you get wisdom from being understanding. So what is it? So why not just say the tivuna leish chachma?
Okay, good question. But why is it chachma?
What you were saying.
Right. Why is it chachma to the ish tivuna? Why is it the tivuna to the ish chacham?
Yeah.
Okay, good question. I'm not sure if we'll answer, but good question.
What does it mean a plan to do sin? Like, why not just doing a sin is like for a fool? Like, it's like, you know.
Okay, good.
The plan of sin.
Yeah, right. Well, why is Rashi putting to the Eitzah? The Eitzah. Right, very good question. Why is it the Atzah Shatayim? It's a joke for a fool to do a sin. In fact, that is what Mitzudos, I think, does say. He learns it's Maisa Hara. It's a bad action. Mitzudos learns that way. To do something evil is a joke for a fool. But Rashi learns it's like Eitzah. It's like the plan itself. So why is Rashi putting it into the framework of a plan? An Eitzah, thoughts. Zima does have the connotation of Rashi. Mitzudos is, I don't want to say missing, but he's trying to give a basic idea. There is a subtlety in Zima. Zima is the kasha zamam lasos lachiv, kasha zamam lo kasha asa. It means it's a thought. It's a plan. It's like a scheme. It doesn't mean actually doing. In fact, by edim zomim, if they actually do it, if their plan is successful, they're no longer edim zomim, or you don't punish them like edim zomim. Right? It's kasha zamam lasos, what they intended to do. Right, they created a plan, these false witnesses, right? The first parak of Makos, and they tried to get somebody, something, you know, killed, somebody get Malkos, whatever it is, and they get punished themselves because of their plan. But it's like a scheme. So it doesn't mean you're actually doing the action. It's the scheming itself that the Pasuk at Rashi is highlighting. It's a certain nuance in the word.
Is Rashi saying that
it's also difficult to understand and not hold that a scheme?
That what?
That the fool would have a scheme. You think it's like the Russia or something like that, or I don't know. But
I mean, why would a fool have a scheme? He's a real fool, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's intelligent.
But you know, fools do have harebrained schemes sometimes, you know? They're not.
I wouldn't call that a scheme.
You wouldn't call that a scheme, huh? More like a scam. We try to teach schemes, not scams. Okay, I hear. I mean, why is he a fool, not a Rasha? Right, what's the difference between a Rasha and a Ksil and a fool?
Well, a Rasha, well, a fool is just, you know, a guy who just, he's just stupid, he doesn't think of, you know, his actions. He doesn't think of the consequences.
Okay.
He's just a guy who just does whatever serves him for the moment. Benefits him at the moment. Because if he really thought it through, he would know I mean, I think he would know that, you know, there are certain consequences that comes with that action, and if he's really aware of that, he wouldn't do it. But in Russia, he thinks through every possibility, and he understands the consequences that comes about it from it, and he does it anyway, and he knows it's bad, and you know that's he knows that it's bad, and he still does it.
Okay, that's not bad.
But that's what I think.
I mean, it seems to me like he's talking about acts of the mind.
Okay,
like, it's talking about how the seal, his mind will naturally go towards like evil schemes.
Okay.
Like that's what's easy for him to do, whereas you have to like pull his energy away from that to do something else. Whereas the Ishtuna, his mind will naturally tend towards Chachma.
Okay, good. Okay, good. Yes, for sure. I'm going that direction. I just want to develop these points.
Maybe it isn't.
But yeah, that's basically the general. The general approach.
Like,
So what's the unifying idea also? What's the unifying...
Is a fool just misguided? Like
oh, so I tell you the fool. The fool, Rabbi Moskowitz one told me this. Well, he holds the difference between the fool and the Rasha. Is the fool doesn't realize how his actions harm himself. Right? He thinks that he's doing something. He thinks it's better for him. But ultimately, it ends up harming him, and he just doesn't realize, like you said, he doesn't realize the consequences of his actions, that really what he's doing is really harming himself, so he's a fool. He's hurting himself, but he doesn't realize it. Okay, that's the fool.
Does a fool have to hurt himself?
Yeah.
Doesn't that other people?
No, that's the Rasha. The Rasha hurts other people, and the Rasha doesn't realize, that by harming others, he hurts himself. That's the Rasha. So Russia thinks that by harming others, and he's benefiting himself, let's say he steals, so he thinks he's harming other people, but he himself is getting richer. So Russia doesn't realize that by hurting others, he ultimately comes back and hurts him. Right? Isn't that foolish? No, Russia won't do anything to hurt himself. He realizes, like...
Oh, it does hurt himself.
Ultimately it does. It does, but through others. It's like a more abstract type of way of harming a person or yourself. Mm-hmm. By, you know, destroying the society you're around or harming your friends or things like that.
That's more indirect.
It's more indirect. It's through others. So the Rasha is willing to hurt other people, but he won't when it comes to himself. He thinks things through. He realizes what's going to hurt him or what's not. But when it comes to harming others, he just thinks it's like, by benefiting myself and hurting others, I'm going to ultimately gain. He doesn't realize that ultimately he loses also. It's bad for him also. But the seal...
When you say it's like foolish to badmouth other people because... it's going to hurt your business relationships and stuff like that.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah, I mean, sometimes, you know, the Russia could be a fool also, and the fool could be a Russia, for sure. But it's true. I mean, I'm not sure whether Misha would call that guy Exil or Russia. He might do both. Might be both, you know. But Russia is more like in terms of the harm, person who harms others. And Exil is a person who doesn't realize the harm he's doing to himself. Russia is more a person who's the derech of a person who's willing to harm others, but he doesn't want to hurt himself. The Ksil just doesn't realize the consequences and actions are going to ultimately have on him. He's a fool. He doesn't see this is ultimately bad for him. But the Russia is a little bit, intellectually he sees that idea. The Ksil doesn't misses. But he just thinks that harming others is the way to go. You'll benefit, you'll make out. Law of the jungle. It's a good thing for him. Okay. A little bit of a sidetrack. Okay, so we'll go with Isaac's basic approach. Okay. is that the fool, so it's very easy for him. Let's see. The fool is very easy for him to do to scheme about sinning. Okay, to be involved mentally in the parsha of sinning. Okay. And just like it's very easy for the fool, so just like in terms of thinking about sinning and being involved mentally in a sin, planning the sin, thinking about the sin, right? It's very easy for the fool, right? Very easy. That's where his energy goes immediately to thinking about sin. He doesn't have to work very hard. Naturally, he can just do it. And he doesn't see why that harms him. He doesn't see anything bad from that. So too, for the ish tefuna, the understanding person, the person who's a deep thinker, so for him to pursue chachma, knowledge, that's also just as easy. That's the basic description of the comparison. We'd like to develop those ideas further and see if we can bring them out. We use the Rambam to bring out this Rashi. But yeah, go ahead. If you have a question first.
Yeah, so why is the Pasuk in Rashi put in the framework of Asiya?
Why doesn't it?
And why does it? It seems like Rashi's talking about Asiya. And Pasuk says also Asos Zima, not just thinking Zima.
Oh, why does Rashi, when the Pasuk says aso zima, to doing zima.
Right.
And Rashi throws into atzas chatayim.
Yeah, and then later bein av la'asos.
Oh, so for the, right. I guess in the sense is that it is an activity, chachma and atzas chatayim. It is an activity, it's just a mental activity.
Okay, so he's not actually...
Okay. Like learning, pursuing chachma, like I guess you could say bein av lasos, it's kalahi bein av lasos, it's easy in the eyes of the ish tefuna, the understanding person, lasos to do chachma. But what is to do chachma? It's really a mental activity of learning, teaching, studying. You know, it's a mental activity. So the framework of the pasuk is the mental activity of learning chachma or using your mind to be involved in sense. Okay, but it's speaking about it's comparing two types of mental activities, right? Not physical actions, but the mental activity of the ish tevuna, which is involving pursuit of chachma. Right? And the fool would be involved in atzas chatayim, sinful plans and sinful thoughts. Okay? Okay. Okay. So let me, I'll try to develop this with two different Rambams. Okay? And we'll see if we can put together the whole pasuk. But they're interesting Rambams. So the first one is in the Mor Nevuchim, Chelek Gimel, Perek Ches. Okay, I'm just taking out, you know, a paragraph from it. Okay, so it's a famous Rambam. His interpretation of, in the Kafach, it's on page Resh Peches. Okay, so it's the Rambam's trying to explain. He says, Kfar Yadat Amram, hear her Aveira, Kashin Me Aveira. So the thoughts of an Avera, a Gemara in Yuma Chavtas, the thoughts of an Avera is worse, more difficult, means worse, than the Avera itself. Okay? And in particular, Avera has a connotation in Chazal very often. Avera means like sexual Avera. Okay? So it means sexual thoughts and a sexual fantasy is worse than the act itself, than a Maisa Avera. Okay, that's Chazal. And the Ram is going to explain it. Okay? So the Ram's like this. V'yishli bebir zeh perish muflameod. So he says, I have an amazing, wonderful explanation for this Chazal. Because intuitively, it seems crazy. You'd think that the a sexual act is, right, an impermissible sexual act is worse than simply a fantasy about a sexual act. Right? You're just fantasizing. Why is that worse? Right? Which ultimately I think is why the Ksil, like a joke to the Ksil, going back to the Pasuk and Mishlei, is why it's a joke to the Ksil, Atzas Chatayim, thinking about something sinful. So if the Ksil fantasizes about sleeping with a married woman, let's say he fantasizes about it. So to him, it's a joke. He's not doing anything wrong. What's he doing wrong? It's not such a big deal. He's just thinking about it. He's not going to actually do it, right? So it's a joke to him. He takes it very lightly. Kalahi bein of it. It's nothing. He's just thinking about averos. He's not actually doing them, right? So he doesn't take it seriously, and it's very easy for him to do. He finds he has no resistance to it. because his superego, his conscience, doesn't stop him. Because he doesn't really feel bad about it. What's he really doing wrong? He's just thinking about Avera. Okay. But Chazal is saying that that is worse than the Avera itself. The thinking about Avera and the fantasizing about it, playing it out in your mind, right? Playing it out in your mind is worse than the Avera itself. Okay, so why is that? So it's, Ram says he's an amazing explanation. He says, Vehu, She'a'agamim asa Avera. So a person does an Avera. Hare ases Avera, Machmas, Hamikrim, Hanispachem, Lachem, Rokomo, Shibiarti. So a person does an Avera. So he does it with things that are part of his physical body. He violates the Avera with his instincts, right? The part, the animalistic part of him, his animalistic instincts. But a person's mind, that's one of a person's, like, the special properties that's attached to a person's essence, what makes him a human being. That's his mind. When he fantasizes about a avera in his mind, mentally. So now he's involved in this area, in a violation of the Torah, and in a sexualizing his thoughts. His mind is becoming involved in the avera. So it's not as bad. Somebody who takes a slave, a stupid slave, okay, not just a slave, a stupid slave, and he works him inappropriately. And he, let's say he takes him from his master, and he uses him, makes him do work that he doesn't have to do. It's not as bad as taking an intelligent person, a chassid, a pious person, a free man, and forcing him into slave labor. That's much worse avera. So this form of man, the essence of man, it's only appropriate a person should use it for what it was intended for. So it should be involved and attached to that which is exalted in chachma and wisdom and pursuing knowledge of God and learning Torah. Right, and that's what man should use his mind for, not to be involved in lowly manners. Okay, and then Ram goes off onto Nivla Sapeh. Okay, and same kind of thing.
Saying even though you can't legislate these things, it's worse.
Yeah, right, exactly. It means that even though technically, in terms of the halachic system, the mice of air is much worse. For example, you sleep with a married woman, it's a chi of karis, right? Misa be in Bezdin, but it's a, and in court, the courts will kill you. And if the courts don't get you, it's a misa. It's a karis. And a fantasy about sleeping with a married woman and thinking how you're going to do it. And it's, okay, maybe it's a losachmod if she's married. Let's say she's not even married. It's just some other erva, right? So it's not even a losachmod. It's losasurachavavamacharnechem. Okay, it's basically at most a lav. And it's not a lav sheish, but maisa. You don't get any malchus for it. So even though halachically it's much, much reduced, so the fool thinks that that somehow means it's not such a big deal. But philosophically, in terms of the person's perfection, and psychologically, in terms of what it does to the person, the fantasy, the sexual fantasies, has a much more corrosive influence on his personality. And it's not just a sexual fantasy. It means any time a person uses his mind to engage in averos, when he thinks about them and fantasizes about them. That's it, not just in sexual areas. Avera has that connotation, but it means atzas chataim. So then he's doing something that's much more harmful to his personality, even though technically it's not as big an avera on the halachic scale. But in terms of his perfection, his shleimus, and the effect it has on him and his true soul, it's much worse. Okay, and the Ram gives this analogy. He's saying that if you take a stupid eved, stupid slave, and you work him inappropriately, so that's, look, it's wrong, it's definitely a sin, but it's not as bad as taking a free man, a pious free man, a perfected individual, and he's free, and then you're turning him into a slave against his will, inappropriately. That's much worse. Why is it worse? Right? What's the difference? Because in the analogy, because what you're doing is you're corrupting his identity. You're converting a great thing, a chassid, a ben chorin, the dignity and the self-esteem and the identity of the free person, and you're turning him into a slave, and you're destroying his personality, his sense of self. Right? So it's not just you're doing something wrong by taking, when you take a slave and you're who's not perfected and you work him, it's wrong. You have no right to use him. You have no right to do that to him. It's like a lack of justice. Either you're stealing from the original owner or you're doing something wrong to the slave. You have no right to make him work something. But it's like a lack of justice. It's a maisa avera. But you're not destroying the personality. He's used to it. This is who he is. He knows he's usually forced to work when he doesn't have to. And it's not corrosive to his identity, his personality. He is who he is. He's a foolish slave. That's who he is. And there's nothing about what you did to him that's going to change who he is. He already looks at himself that way. Okay. Rightly or wrongly, this is his lot in life, certainly in those times. But the Chassid ben Chorin, by you doing kidnapping him and then working him and making him a slave, you're destroying a personality that exists, a perfected individual who has a certain greatness of mind, a greatness of personality. And by you doing that, working him, you're harming him. You're destroying his sense of self. So what I'm saying is likewise, you have two parts to you. You have your intellect, which can be devoted towards great things, chachma and perfection and developing worthwhile high level social relationships and devoted for a purpose. And then you have another part of you, your instinctual part, your animalistic part, that you're appetitive, the sexual and other things, more base desires. And when a person sins because he can't control his base desires, okay, they're base desires to begin with. They're hard to control. Yes, you would like to control them, but you can't always control them. Sometimes they get the best of you, and you violate the Torah in one way or another. It happens to everybody. It's not, you don't condone it. It's not supposed to, but it happens. What does it do to you ultimately? Not that much. Not really, because you violated the Torah with your base desires. Maybe you'll make it more difficult to control them in the future. And there are consequences, but it's not so bad because they are what they were. You still have the part of you which can be engaged in chachma, and you still have the higher element of you, your soul, that's not really corrupted by a maisa avera, right? A maisa avera, it's not really corrupted by. But if you engage in fantasy, your psyche and your mind becomes involved in that avera. And it's not just a physical act where you have your instinctual desires are satisfied and then it goes away. But your energy becomes locked in the fantasy, and your mind now starts becoming used a vehicle of sinning, and now it competes. The energy, the sin starts competing with the chachma, and it changes the identity of what your mind is used for. It becomes a tool for sinning as opposed to a tool for perceiving wisdom, and it changes who the person is. Has a much more profound corrosive effect on a person's psyche and his and a more permanent effect, the fantasies, sexual fantasies. Really, if a person engages in them and doesn't try to control himself and just thinks it's nothing, it's not a big deal, and just kind of, he just treats it like a total joke. So he doesn't realize that ruins his psyche. It ruins your psyche. The mice of air are not as bad. It's the fantasy itself, much, much more harmful to the person. Yeah, go ahead.
If you have a guy who has these fantasies, and he knows he'll never do them because it's luckily inappropriate or not okay to do it.
Right, that's the case.
So like, what's the problem? Okay,
well, that's exactly the case.
He's saying he's crazy, but like he has these.
Yeah, that's the point. It's not because you're going to do it.
How will it be an imperfection in the person.
No, I was going to say it ruins...
I see it, but mentally,
it's like... It's like there's different types of... An analogy is like different types of jobs. You have jobs that's like physical labor, right? Physically a construction worker. Okay. So, I mean, different people, but a guy is a construction worker. So he works from 9 to 5 and then he comes home and then he can learn. Okay. He can learn, or like Chazal, they're their equivalent. They used to carry water, right? Water carriers and wood choppers, right? That's their physical labor. That's they said they should be oives malacha because it's mecham in the guf. It's good exercise, good for the body. And then when you're not working, you can think, you can learn, because you're exercising. It's a physical. It's your body might be a little tired, but your mind is fresh. But a person who is involved, a person who's say a lawyer, where that's like a very it's sophisticated. He has to deal with sophisticated law, and he has to use his mind. So that requires a lot of mental energy. So then when he comes home, a person who uses a lot of mental energy in his work, so then he's exhausted, he's mentally exhausted. So he comes home and his mind needs a rest. Watches TV or something to give his mind a rest. You know? Because it's a different whether a person has a certain amount of reserves of how much energy he can devote physically and mentally. And that's one thing, just in terms of a quantitative thing. So if your mental energy is going towards fantasies, you have less mental energy available to go to Chachma. That's one point, okay? But then there's a qualitative point. Your psyche is more affected by the fantasies than by an action itself, because like the fantasy shapes the. I'm going to qualify this in a second, but the fantasy shapes the structure of your psyche to a different degree than a mere action. Okay, now let me qualify, because a lot of times an action, even when a person engages in an action, there's a fantasy that accompanies it, and therefore it's really a dual phenomenon. Okay, so it's not so pashut that an action is just an action, but in theory, if it was just an action. It draws the instinct, but that's not really the problem of the Avera. The problem of the Avera is that it changes your psychical structure, changes your self-identity. And that comes from the mental part of it, the fantasy part of it, the part that exists in your mind. And therefore, generally an Avera really has two components. It has the act itself, and then there's a fantasy that goes along with it in your mind. Because usually a person sleeps with a married woman, let's say. He's not doing it because of the physical taiva alone. But usually there's a fantasy that he's engaging in, whatever it might be. And that's why he's doing it. So there's like really two components always. And in a sense, the much more harmful part of it is not the physical action, but it's the fantasy part that he's engaging in. That's really what changes his psyche, changes who he is, and affects him in a much deeper way.
Usually the action doesn't really last that long.
Right. And the fantasy does. The fantasy occurs. Yeah. Right, exactly. That's another point. The fantasy is always available to the person.
Yeah. I understand that first. That's also true. Where it can train your mental... It could train your mind.
Yeah, that's in a quantitative sense.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, I still don't understand that if you still have these, you know, fantasies...
Because you're setting up.
Like, I understand your psyche might be, you know, imperfected, but if you just keep it to yourself, you know, you lock it up in your room or whatever.
Yeah, but then it becomes.
Then, like, who cares? You still do what you do, and
no, that's the point.
You, it doesn't affect anyone else.
It does. It affects the way you're able to think, because then your mental energy is going to go down the paths that you set up for yourself. So you fix up, you fix in your mind where your mind goes, where your mind thinks. You want to develop your mind such that it naturally goes towards Chachma. And by learning, engaging in learning, your like Chachma is Tevuna. It becomes natural. Your mind will naturally go towards Chachma.
So that's the first point you mentioned.
No, I'm saying the second point. It is when you engage, the way you use your mind sets up a structure of your mind, a structure of your psyche. It's like laying down roads. and then when, or maybe let's use the mashal of water. It's like digging canals. So that when you're digging canals, such that when now when the water flows, it'll go towards the canals you dug. So if you engage in fantasies, in sinful fantasies, so then your energy will naturally flow in that direction. If you engage in chachma, your energy will naturally flow in that direction. The quantitative point is different. It's not the structure of your psyche, it's just you have a limited, amount of water. If you direct it in one place, it's not going to go in the other place. Each day, let's say. Each day you have a certain amount of energy. Wherever you go, it's gonna there's a certain amount. Right? But I'm saying is that the actually engaging in the fantasy with your mind, it changes the very structure of the psyche itself, such that that becomes where the easiest outlet, where naturally your energy is going to go. That your first move is going to be, I'm just going to go upstairs and watch a movie, and engage in right? That's going to be not like I'm going to go and learn. It's going to be, you know, I'm beat now. I want to just go and watch a movie for an hour, and that's going to be the easiest thing for you to do, as opposed to go sit down with the safer and learn for an hour. That's going to be hard to do. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm just curious. Could this be illustrated through the idea of the chida of Adam and Chava? That it's almost like they, in a certain sense, they created their own bent towards Avera once they committed it.
Yeah, I mean that Rambam's interpretation by Adam and Chava. That like it changed where their energy naturally the yitzer harami b'chutz yitzer harami b'fnim, that interpretation.
Right. Right. So I mean that was obviously a very fundamental change, but describing reminded me of that process.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely in the same parsha, for sure. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to describe exactly. In terms of this phenomenon of why it's so easy for the person. To sit down and it's just, you'll find it much easier to go to watch TV. How easy is it just to sit down and watch TV? To go to a movie? It's very easy.
That's a very passive activity.
Yeah, exactly. It's passive. It's easier to be passive, right?
Right.
Right. But it's not intrinsically easier to be passive. It seems that way that it's intrinsically easier to be passive and watch, you know, the ideas of the culture that we live in. And that's what seems easier is because that's the way you accustom yourself to doing. You accustom the way for your mind to be engaged in passive entertainment, passively taking in ideas, right? Just sit down and, exactly, passive and active is also. Chachma very often is active. Even if you're hearing a shir, your mind is actively have to work on it. Does it really make sense? You ask questions. Okay, so the passive and active is also, it's another chilek in the whole thing. But even, so I don't want to get into the passive. I don't want to make that, that's a whole different.
So watching a TV should be.
No, because I'll tell you why. Let's leave that out, the passive active. That's a separate point. It's also an interesting point, that your mode of operating. But even in passive, you could listen to a shir online. You could sit down and put on a shir, right? Just as much, but it's much harder for you to go and put on a shir online for an hour than it is to watch a movie. It's just easier. It's just, you find no resistance. That's your natural inclination.
Even if you're the type of person that's trying to derive ideas or analyze it.
Right, and even if you know somehow, you know that after you listen to the shiur, you've never regretted the fact that I listened to a shiur for an hour, and it was interesting, and I enjoyed it, and you know the shiur, and that will entertain you, and you'll enjoy them. Right, and you'll know afterwards, you always say back, you'll never say that I wish I had watched a movie in that hour and I hadn't learned Torah. You're never going to say that. Has it ever happened to you? It's got to be a really bad shiur for that to happen, okay? But still, it's going to be much easier for you to engage in the...
Not here, though. It's
somewhere else. Yeah, go ahead. What?
Okay, fine. So watching a TV, would you agree that that's also a fantasy? That's for sure fantasy, right? Watching TV.
In a loose sense, yeah. And I mean, if you analyze, you're identifying with the characters. I mean, that's the whole chachma of Hollywood.
How
they accomplish that, right?
So watching TV, and so you're putting your mind...
I'm saying it's a mental. Yeah, that's a mental avera.
Okay. I'm not going to be that harsh, I'm going to put that out there, if it is a fantasy then it should be equatable to fantasizing about illicit relationships with, I don't know.
Yeah, it's in the same, it's the same, right, the Rambam at the end here, the Rambam at the end here says like this, he says, the chomish nishtamish
me'ashavto. Right, you're not the film of Gone.
Right, you gotta be realistic who you are. Okay, well,
I'm just talking about the shit.
It's Rambam. It's chomish nishtamish me'ashavto o diburo. B'davar minyani osechush shu cherpolano. Somebody who is mishtami, he uses with his mind or his speech anything in that area of the sexual, which is something that's a disgrace for us. The Rambam is very harsh on the sexual. Basically, he's involved in the appetitive or the sexual more than is really he needs to. You still need to eat, you need to procreate. These are basic needs that have a purpose in the biological world, but you do more than excess. Or he sings songs, right? I just want to start a little earlier. It's not appropriate to use that good which was given to us for our perfection, your intellect. To be involved in these lowly things. Until the point which you're willing to say everything that the non-Jewish world, the foolish non-Jewish world, which is corrupt, involved in their songs and their stories and their books and their movies. Ram says movies here and TV shows. Which is fit for them, it's appropriate to them. That's their world. That's who they are. But lo kadosh. But that's not fit for a nation of philosophers, the people who are supposed to be separate from the not steeped in the instinctual and the appetitive and the sexual. But a nation who engages in the physical to what's necessary to serve God, but what we need is to satisfy your psyche so you can move on, but not to make that your essence, not that your pursuit of pleasure should become the essence of who you are. Look, that's Goyim, they don't have the idea that every the nation of philosophers. It's a Jewish idea that the Mamlachas Kohenim Go Kadosh, the nation that where every the nation as a whole, it has restrictions, has control of their desires, so that their mind and his mental capacity is free to pursue chachma. Okay, and then when you get involved in their culture and you steep yourself in it, it has an effect on you. What's that effect? I'm saying the clearest effect is that kischok l'ksil asozima, is that on the one hand, you know you're not going to be a happier person after you watch that TV show and you watch that movie, but still, that's where your energy goes.
So Goyim don't have that, why? Because they don't have the opportunity for that?
They know the Torah. They're not set up. They have individual philosophers, but without the system...
They were afforded the Noachah laws.
The Noachah laws are the basic laws that are necessary to be a human being. Basic laws. You know, murder, stealing, things. The basic laws that without that you can't even have a human society. A civil human society. Mishpat. But the Tariag Mitzvos, or the Torah, is trying to produce a much more perfected individual.
That's interesting. That's actually kind of relevant to what I'm working on for tomorrow, because that pasuk I talked to you about.
Yeah. The Ram is going to quote. I'm going to get to Ram.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We're going to get there. Okay, but the Torah has a different aim. It's trying to produce a certain type of a personality, a different personality, a personality that in the world, in the Goyim, exists in individuals. Here you're trying to create a nation of this type of person. And that requires that the person doesn't identify himself simply as a pleasure-seeking animal. But he realizes that his mind should be freed up to pursue knowledge and wisdom. And he wants a healthy psyche. And a healthy psyche can't be steeped in these things. And then the sure sign is the fact that when you sit down, your energy is going to go towards these types of thinking. And when you engage your mind in atzas chatayim, it has that consequence that it changes your mind, and it makes it such that the next time it's going to go that way again. But as opposed to an action, even if the action goes too far, the action itself doesn't corrupt the person. It's the mental part of it, the mental part of the action that really corrupts the person. So that's why I wanted to qualify. A person engages in a Maisa Aveira, there's two components, and it's the mental part that really is the most influential on him. Because of that, if you just have the mental part, you have the worst part. It's the thought process and the fantasy that accompanies the Aveira, which could be isolated on its own, is worse than just the Maisa itself. Even though in practice, I'm saying, practically, you don't really just ever get a Maisa alone. But conceptually, the mice is not the problem.
So if you're osake,
you could just have the mental part, and that's the worst part.
So if you're osake in a mitzvah, can't think of a good example, but and you totally have the wrong idea, and you have like a fantasy about it.
Of
a mitzvah.
Of a mitzvah, okay.
You're performing it.
Okay.
So you're doing an action, and you're not really getting any benefit from it.
That's sort of true, but it's a different point. It is true to a certain extent, but it's a different point. There is still benefit, but that's a different idea.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
So why wouldn't you say that the hero is relatively the same as the Maisa? Because both have the mental component.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think it's when you have both components right. in a Maisa, it's not the Maisa component that hurts you. It's the mental right. component. And the proof is when you isolate just the mental component, it's just as harmful.
Right. So you're saying that the mental is worse than Maisa.
Yeah. The mental is... Right. If you could have a Maisa, just a Maisa,
right.
that would be not nearly as bad as just the mental alone.
Right.
I'm just saying in practice, I don't think there's right. that common where it's just a Maisa and there's no mental fantasy that accompanies it.
Right.
But the part that really harms you is... That's what I'm saying, you know. I think the Maisa really has both in general. So, you know, I don't know if a guy's ever, you know, it's going to be, it's not, I don't think so. I don't think you ever just have a guy sleeping with, you know, in a sexual prohibition and then it's just purely a mice. I guess it's possible.
But no, like war. Like, we have rules. I mean, I don't know if it's the same thing, but like.
Well, like H.S. Fuss for one?
No, like, isn't there like a lot that if you just come out of a war... You can't control your.
Is your first star?
Yeah.
Is your first star?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So okay. Fine.
Is that a case of?
Yeah. Lo dibrato kenegdi yitzara, but that's not a good thing. But sometimes a person is not in control of himself. Torah has to recognize that.
Yeah, but he doesn't have the thoughts, beforehand.
No, he does. That's why he can't control himself. It's the fantasy of the great conqueror. His ego is involved. That's why he can't control himself. That's exactly what makes it impossible.
Really, I was thinking that because of his. I was thinking because it's more of the physical, not the mental. Like he.
No. It's the mental part. He's a conqueror. He just conquests. The great man, the great conqueror. That's why he can't control. He's no longer in control of his sexual desires. Once he's wins the war in the battle, his ego is the warrior has a different mental state, and in that mental state, he's not really capable. Much more difficult for him to control his sexual urges. Different point, though. Yeah, go ahead, Yaakov.
In what way does fantasy involve the mind? Because I think Raman says in Shmuel Kvarkim that the imaginative faculty is different than the hoga, the intellectual faculty.
Yeah, I don't mean like... right, I'm using mental in a broad sense.
Okay.
Right, in a broad sense. It's part of his... Ram says it's Nistapach Litsuraso. It's like attached to his essence. Essence is the pure abstract intellect, but the psychological and the mind is attached to it, it's part of it. So I'm just distinguishing between more of a coarse idea between mental and physical. Not getting involved in the different powers and the
right.
logical faculty and the abstract reasoning and spatial reasoning and psychological and future predicting and you know, there's different amount.
The mind is involved, obviously.
Yeah, right. It's a mental involvement.
It's not pure imagining.
Yeah, right. Correct. Okay, fine. So let me try to take up the second part of the Pasuk. Okay. The second part of the Pasuk is the Gemara in... first, let me do a Gemara in Brachos, and then we'll do another Rambam. Okay? So the Gemara in Brachos is like this. It says, it's Lama Gimel and Beis. It says, Velmer of Chanina, Hakobi de Shemayim Chutz Mir Shemayim. So everything is in the hands of heaven, except for fear of God. Okay, which Rashi says means that you're not in control of Aruch HaKatzer, your genetics, or Ani V'Ashir, or your wealth, right? Whether you're going to be successful or not, whether you're born into wealth, whether you're not, businesses, whether you'll succeed or not, a lot of it's outside your control. Chacham V'Shoti, your mental abilities. Lavan V'Shachor, how you look, your appearance, your physical appearance. Hakobi Yeshemayim Hu. Avot Tzadik V'Rasha, Einabal Ayde Shemayim, Ela Zum Moser Ba'adam, Yadash Adam, V'Nas Nafanu Shnei Drachim, V'Yivchar Lo Yer Shemayim. So you can choose whether you want to be a Tzadik or Rasha. That's your choice. Okay. Shinemar Va'ata Yisrael, Ma'ashem Lekecha Shoma Yimach, Kiyim Liyira. Okay. So there's a pasuk in Akev. It's a pasuk like this. Klai Yisrael, Moshe is telling the Klai Yisrael, what does Hashem your God ask from you? Kiyim Liyira Hashem Lekecha, to fear Hashem your God, that's all he asks for you. La'lechas B'chol Drachav, to walk in all his ways. U'la'ava Oso, and to love him. V'la'avadas Hashem Lekecha, and to serve Hashem your God. B'chol Levav, v'chol Navshecha, with all your heart and all your soul. Okay, what does God really ask of you? Okay, not so much. Okay? Fear him, walk in all his ways. Love him, serve him with all your heart and all your soul. Okay? What's the problem? Okay? Why can't you just be a good Jew? Okay? So the Gemara says, Atu Yerushalayim Milsa Zutrahi. Is it such a small thing? It sounds like it's not such a... Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, what is he asking from you? Right? V'am Rav Chanina, Mishim Rishim Bar Yochai, Ein Lokash Baruch Hu Beis Gnazav, Ela Otsu Shei Yerushalayim, Shei Yerush Hashem, Hi Otsu. It's a big deal. It's not so easy, right? It's not such a simple thing. Trans reward for Yari Shemayim. It's not easy. Mars is in. Yeah, it is. It really is a small thing. It's easy to do. Legavi Moshe Milsa Zutri. Yeah, for Moshe Rabbeinu, who's the speaker, it's a small thing. It's very easy to do. Okay. The Amr of Chanina Mashal Adam Shavakshim and Kli Gadol. Okay. So it's a mashal, is if the people, somebody's asking for you, a big kli, v'yeshlo, and you have a v'yeshlo, and you have a big kli. Guy wants to borrow your car, and you have one. Domov kli katan, it's the same thing as if he asks you for a fork, right? He wants to borrow your car, wants to borrow your fork. What's the difference? If you have it, and you can give it, what's the difference? Okay. Kli katan, he asked you for a fork, right? Katan ve'ein lo, but you don't have a fork. Dom alav kli gadol, it's like a huge thing. You don't have it, right? If you have it, right? If you have it, and somebody asks you for it, it's not a big deal. So for somebody who has Yiras Shamayim and loves God with all his heart and his soul, to him, it seems like a small thing. But to somebody who doesn't have it, it appears like a huge thing. And it really is difficult. He doesn't have it. Right? So even if he's asking a small thing from you, right? Even if somebody's asking a small thing from you, if you don't have it, it's a tremendous request. You don't have it. But if somebody's asking a big thing from you, but you happen to have it, no problem. It's a small favor. Right? Okay, so we'll try to develop that point itself. One question is, let's just say we buy it. Let's just say we buy that whole line of reasoning. I think I heard this from Rebbe, but I'm not sure. Okay, what's the sense in Moshe Rabbeinu? He's talking to Klal Yisrael, he's talking to us. It's not easy for us. We don't have it. Okay, we don't have Yiras Shamayim and Avos Hashem with all our heart and our soul. We don't walk in all of God's ways. We don't serve Him with no right, no holds bar, nothing, everything, all our energy totally devoted to God. Right, Moshe Rabbeinu did fine. For him, it's nothing. It's a small thing. But for us, it's a big deal. So what is he doing saying to us? What is God really asking for you? Well, you're talking to us. Who are you talking to yourself? You're talking to us. Who are you talking to, Moshe Rabbeinu? Who's Sefer Dvarim for? Is it to make Moshe Rabbeinu feel good? Or is he trying to talk to Klal Yisrael to benefit us? So what's the sense in the whole Gemara? Yes, it's not a big deal for Moshe Rabbeinu. What's the pshat on the pasuk? It's not a big deal. Yeah, because Moshe Rabbeinu is the one talking. But who's he talking to? Doesn't this common sense demand that you should frame your sentences in terms of your listener? What's the point? And he's not talking to himself here for his own pleasure. So for us, it is a big deal. And Moshe should know this analogy. He should know Rav Chanina saying. So it is a big deal for us. Because we don't have it, and it's hard. So he shouldn't make it seem like it's a small thing. What's the point of the pasuk?
Can you just say that you have the ability to get, have it?
Okay, we do, but we don't have it yet. So it is a hard thing to do, no?
I mean, did Moshe have it from birth? I mean, I don't know.
Okay, let's say he didn't.
So he worked on it.
Okay, good.
We have the ability to work on it.
We have that ability, but we haven't done it yet. So what's he telling us? Why is he making it seem like it's easy? It's not. He knows it was hard. If he had to work on it like we did, it's hard. He knows that. So why is he pretending it's a small thing?
I don't think it is a small thing. I don't think he's saying it's a small thing. I'm saying there was a point in time where Moshe Rabbeinu had to... I mean, I'm just speculating.
No, yeah, that's the thing. So he should know. So he should know that's not such an easy thing. Why is he talking like it's such a small thing? Yeah, for him right now, 120 years... about the highest level of perfection. But he should know it wasn't easy to get there. Of all people, he should know.
I still don't understand the question. Like, if
so why is he talking to us like it's such a small thing? What is he gaining from that?
No, what was your question to me saying that it's just teaching you that maybe you have the ability to work on it, even though it's a hard thing? We know it's a hard thing.
You have the ability to work on it?
Yeah.
How does that show you that you have the ability to work on it?
I mean, what else could you say?
It's non sequitur. How does him saying that show you have the ability to work on it?
Meaning, you have the potential to get there. I mean, it's hard. It just requires a lot of
How is he showing you that you have the potential to get there?
From the Gemara.
Tomorrow. Okay, I'm not sure. Maybe you're saying this idea. Well, maybe you might be saying something. Okay.
Well,
think about it. Okay. In the meantime, while you're thinking, okay, we're gonna go to the Rambam in the Morin Avuchim. Okay, Chelik Beis at the end of the chapter Lama Tess. You have a question or
no?
No. Okay, fine. So it's getting a little late. It always seems to be getting a little late, you know? Okay.
Or to start earlier.
I know, right? Okay. So. Okay. Now the Rambam, it's towards the end. In the Kafach, it's top of page Reshin and Dalet. So the Rambam's like this. V'kashinadaber b'maymer zeh b'tamei mitzvos. So when the, at the end, in the next chelik, chelik gimel, he's going to talk about the reasons for the mitzvos. Yizbar l'cha mitzadaka v'chachmasa. So I'll explain to you about the tzedakah means how the mitzvahs are well balanced. Chuk mishpatim tzadikim, right? Pasuk in Vezchanan. That Zach's going to speak about tomorrow night. Okay. So tzadikim, the Rambam says.
Maybe I won't speak about that.
Chukim mishpatim tzadikim. Rambam says kvaridat inyan tzadikim uzanim. They're well balanced. Okay, the mitzvahs are well balanced. Okay, in the chachmas, and there's tremendous chachma in which mitzvahs God chose and how he set them up. And I'm going to explain about that. And that's why you say the Torah is perfect. It's perfectly balanced. To add something to Torah is to make it less perfect. It's perfect amount of everything. To take anything away from the Torah is to make it less perfect. When you have something that's tamim, perfect, call a yeser kechaser. Anything extra is like taking away something. Okay? Aval. Somebody who imagines, who thinks that the yoke of Torah is heavy and it's hard, and it's a tremendous burden. All this is a mistake in thinking. Okay, you haven't really thought into it. You haven't really realized what's going on. And the forward, I'm going to explain to you just how easy the Torah is in truth for perfected people. Ulufikach Amar Mashal Kecha Shoma Imach. And that's what Moshe says. What does God from ask from you? Right? Right? Because eights for a perfected person, it's super easy. Elishikoza biyachas chasidim. But again, that's only vis-a-vis Moshe Benu, a shalom, a chasid, a pious person. That's for them. Aval anshi ha'oshek v'akas v'heishta tatlanus. But people who are oppressive, people who get angry and abusive, I think that's how you translate it. The most harmful, difficult thing for them is shiyeshem shofei. There should be a judge, a justice system. that stops their tyranny, right? The worst thing for a person, angry, oppressive guy, or a tyrant, the worst thing for that kind of guy, a bully, is the justice system, which stops him and prevents him. That's the most harmful, damaging thing you could do to him, a system of justice. V'chein, hisvasonim, hashvelim, people who are engaged in their lowly desires, their base desires. Hakasha b'yosaleim, himenia sifgarish biznos, the most difficult thing for them is to prevent them from being from withholding from uncontrolled sexual fantasies and acts, and to punish somebody who engages in one of these licentious acts to punish them. That's the most difficult mitzvah. The kach kobal migraas, every person who has an imperfection near low, it seems to him kiminias hara, the preventing him from doing evil, shehuma difo kifim megrasa, which is a good thing, according to his imperfection, he believes it's a good thing. Megrasa midosis torach atzam is a tremendous burden you're leveling on him. Ve'ein lishkol kalas ator v'kashel lefish ifosef shakol mushchas shafal b'megras. You cannot evaluate how easy or difficult the Torah is according to the desires of every depraved person who has all these vices and imperfections. Ela nifchanim lefi ha-shalim shevni adam. In order to evaluate the Torah, you have to test it against the most perfected individual, Moshe Rabbeinu. Asher mataras ha-Torah hazu, shekol b'nei adam os adam. And the objective of the Torah is that every person should be that person, should be Moshe Rabbeinu, perfected like Moshe, tzadik Moshe Rabbeinu. So when you want to evaluate, is the Torah make these unbelievably difficult demands on a person? Or is it a good system? Is it a difficult system? Is it onerous? Is it burdensome? You can't go by a person who's completely imperfected. To him, it's going to seem the most difficult system. You know, where there's laws. I can't just go killing whoever I want. I can't just eat whatever I want. I can't sleep with whoever I want. There's restrictions on me. You're going to punish me. What? This is a tremendous burden. I got to wake up for davening. What kind of crazy system is this? It's impossible. So that's a very burdensome system. But you can't evaluate that. The Torah is not, it's a burden. The question is, for Moshe Rabbeinu, was it hard for Moshe Rabbeinu to wake up from Minyan? No, not at all. Very easy. No problem. In fact, he didn't even sleep. Okay, go ahead, Ariel.
Well, so just to get it straight, according to what the Rambam is saying, is he saying that whoever needs a justice system, there's a flaw with them?
No. He's saying for a person, a corrupt person, who likes to bully people and blackmail them and threaten people. So for them, the worst thing is a justice system, which catches them in making bribes and in making threats and blackmail, sends them to jail. That's a difficult system. You're really putting a burdensome system of laws on them. Okay. That's the thing that they say, what kind of Torah is this? It's awful. It's hard. Hard to keep this stuff. I like to steal. You're going to punish me? I have to pay double? A real burden? A real knas you're imposing on me? So they complain about the Torah. 650 mitzvahs is very difficult, very hard mitzvahs. I can't eat this. I can't do this. I got to wake up at this time. I got to go to sleep over here. It's difficult. All these things I have to do, all these things I'm not allowed to do. It's very painful. It's restrictive.
Right.
And it's true. We feel that way. But Moshe Rabbeinu didn't feel that way. When you want to evaluate the Torah, is it a hard system or an easy system? You got to go by Moshe Rabbeinu. Because the objective of the Torah is to create people just like him.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. But, does Moshe Rabbeinu even need the Torah? He doesn't need the Torah. The Elvis didn't have the Torah. They didn't need the Torah. The Torah is for us. So, basically, for everybody the Torah is given to, it seems onerous and burdensome. But, the Torah is trying to make a Moshe Rabbeinu. For Moshe Rabbeinu, it's easy. This is the easiest system to keep. But for everybody who practically has to keep it, it seems awful and hard. So what kind of sense is that?
Wait, is it coming to tell you that the Torah is there to help you achieve that?
Yes. The Torah is there. You shouldn't say how the Torah is tamima, perfect. It's a perfect Torah. It doesn't have any excess burdens. It's not like these of Avodah Zarah. You have to sacrifice your kids to them.
It's like a goal. It's like a goal for us.
It's a goal, correct. It's a goal.
Like,
yes, it's setting up a goal for us. For sure. You want to develop that, or?
What? Sure. I could try. Yeah. The 10 seconds I had to stop for.
Okay, you're done. Time's up. Okay. So, just wasted those 10 seconds out. Yeah. Wasted. Okay.
No, but seriously, I don't know, maybe the Torah set the standard, set the bar at a certain level, which is Moshe Rabbeinu, which is like the highest level, and there are like peasants like us. Yeah, you're above.
Yeah. Peasants.
Yeah. And we have the Torah to help us and try to get to that goal by doing mitzvahs, by doing certain mitzvahs that help us with that perfection, like giving tzedakah that helps in a certain area, and other what are other mitzvahs to fill in?
Well, the thing
those mitzvahs help us achieve Yichud Hashem, that helps us. Kabbalah Malchus Shemayim, that helps us achieve that.
But just to add to that, sorry, you done?
Yeah.
your minute's over. You really?
There you go.
Go ahead.
I mean, I guess Moshe had the same Torah, the same exact words,
right?
The same tefillin, the same luav, and the same.
Right.
Everything. So that's all uniform on how we relate it to. It might have been.
Right, well, how he relates to it is different. He relates to it as an easy, nice, wonderful, beautiful system.
Good.
We relate to it as a burdensome set of restrictions and obligations that ruin our lives and makes us, give up on things that we want to do and makes us do things we don't want to do. That's how we relate to it, okay? And we relate to Moshe being saying to us, mocking us, what has God asked for you? Just to devote all your energy, your heart and soul to him completely. And it's a joke because it's not something that's easy for us to do. We have other things we want to do besides, study, learn Torah. There's other things we want to do. And it's not easy for us. And it's painful to control ourselves. But Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't relate to it that way.
Right.
So, so the two only things between these two things is, and we'll come back to the Pasuk of Mishnah, is what's the sense in the Rambam saying that's how you should evaluate the Torah? And then two is, why is Moshe Rabbeinu saying that to us? Right? Both of them seem to be missing the fact that we're normal people. We're regular people. We're not Moshe Rabbeinu. And the system is made for us, and it is burdensome and difficult. And Moshe Rabbeinu is talking to us, so why is he making it seem like it's so simple? Right. So the thing is like this, is that the system, the Torah, is trying to bring a person to the level of perfection. Ultimately, too, it sets up, like Ariel said, a goal, like Moshe Rabbeinu, tzaddik and Moshe Rabbeinu, the perfection of the ultimate of human perfection. That's what the Torah is trying to do. Now, if you're starting off crooked, the Torah is trying to make you straight. It's trying to fix your defects and your flaws. And it's a person who has flaws and imperfections and vices, it is going to be painful to change himself, to restructure your psyche, to restructure your mental energy, so that it doesn't automatically flow in the direction of taivas, in the direction of TV and passive entertainment and the values and the cultures of our times. That is going to be painful. And it's hard. And it's going to hurt and it's going to be difficult. And to wake up in the morning to go to Minyan is going to be hard. You want to keep sleeping. And to do that in the beginning is going to be difficult. There's no way around that. There's no system in the world that, first of all, everybody's going to have different imperfections. And unless the system is saying, yeah, do whatever you want to do, it's always going to be felt as harmful for you. Now, the system of do whatever you want to do is not going to be felt as being harmful to the person. It's going to be felt as being a wonderful system. Of course, he'll destroy himself because he's leading a life that's harmful to his existence. He's going to harm his body. He's going to harm his soul. That's not a good thing for him. Any system that's going to try to correct his flaws is going to be felt as painful and burdensome because it's asking you to change yourself. Changing yourself is always painful because you are the way you are for a reason, A, and there's a reason why you ended up this way. There's causes. And now when you're changing yourself, you have to kind of work through those causes. You can't just change the symptoms. You got to change the causes of the symptoms. And two is the very, there's a certain inertia. There's a mental inertia that a person has. And changing the inertia, changing the direction your energy flows in, changing the direction, the way your mind is set up, is always felt as painful. A person is comfortable with the status quo. because there's a reason why there's a status quo. And second of all, the very change itself is felt as to be painful. Okay, and that's always going to be the case. The Torah can't avoid that. There's no system in the world designed to help perfect a person, change a person, that's not going to be painful because you're changing the person. It's always going to be painful. So when the way you evaluate the system is when all is said and done, is this a burdensome system? Is it asking you to sacrifice your kid like the Ovadia Avodah Zarah demanded? No. That's what Ram says. When you look at the Torah for a perfected person, okay, is it going to be felt as difficult or easy? Say for a perfected person, it's going to be smooth sailing, easy. It's going to be a joke to do. It's exactly how you would act naturally. It's like the natural way a perfect individual acts is exactly what the Torah is doing. A person who has a philosopher who sees the truth and his psyche is healthy, how is he going to act? Like Moshe Rabbeinu, like Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. That's how they'll act. And that's all the Torah is telling you to do. It's trying to get you, these are the natural actions a person who's perfected would do. And there's going to be zero resistance. Once a person is perfected, that's how he acts. That's what he does. It's not burdensome to say give tzedakah. Person who's stingy, it's going to be hard for him to give tzedakah. It's going to hurt. It's going to be painful parting with his money. But he does that over and over, and all of a sudden he changes his psyche by doing the actions, the repetition. Just like when a person engages sinful fantasies, it over and over, it changes his psyche in a bad way. By engaging in mitzvos, it changes your psyche in a good way. And eventually it becomes easy. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu is trying to convey to us. He's trying to show you that, yes, he knows. He's not a fool. He realizes the Torah is difficult and it's painful and it's hard. And it's difficult to get from point A to point B. To become the level of Moshe Rabbeinu is difficult. But it is important to know that the difficulty is in the beginning. It's not always difficult. Part of the thing that stops the person from doing tshuva, from changing himself, is the fact that he projects the pain he's going through in the beginning, getting up that first day for Minyan, and the second day, and the third day, and he just imagines, this is going to be a torturous existence for the rest of my life. But that is wrong. That is completely wrong. Once you get up every day for 2-3 weeks, certainly 2-3 months, that's it. It just becomes regular. You become accustomed to it, and that pain is non-existent. It becomes easy. You just do it naturally. Okay? Your psyche makes a mistake. Your psyche projects the initial pain you have in making a change in yourself. It projects that to be the rest of your life is going to be this torturous existence of having to wake up in the morning. And it's awful that first few days, the first few weeks, a little bit less awful, but still bad. Okay? But it's your whole life will not be that way. Once you make the change and it kind of settles in, it becomes completely easy. As easy and as big a joke as it was for you to turn on the TV and watch a movie, as big a joke as where there's no resistance, it's so easy. That's just what you want to do. You have zero resistance to it. Whatever your thing is, is to play a sports game, to go on Facebook, to watch a movie, to whatever your thing is to pursue taivas, how big a joke and how easy it is, no resistance, your thing is it flows, so too for the ish tivuna, the person who's reached a certain level of perfection, to be involved in chachma is the exact same thing. It's just as easy. It flows just as normally. There's no resistance. That's where his mind goes. It's the same ease. It might be difficult now for you to sit down and learn. You have to force yourself. You have to work on yourself. It's not easy. It's going to be painful in the beginning. But you should know that once you do this for a certain period of time, it becomes easy. Completely easy. As easy as it was for you to do those other things, it becomes just as easy to be involved in listening to a shiur. Choosing to listen to a shiur becomes your natural thing. Once you start doing that over and over, you change your mind and your energy flows in that direction. And it's important for a person to realize that from Moshe Rabbeinu's perspective, it's Mahashem Sholomach. It's almost like he doesn't even understand what's so difficult. This whole thing, the whole Torah, B'chol Vav Chol Nashecha, it's a joke. It's nothing. It's simple. What's stopping you? Now, what's stopping you is you're not perfected. But when you are perfected, it's easy. It's important for a person to realize that what's hard is the fact that you're imperfected, trying to act like a perfected person. That's what's painful. That's what's hard. Not the Torah itself. The system of the Torah itself, Tari Mitzvos, is not intrinsically a difficult, painful, hard thing to do. To live the life of Torah is intrinsically very simple, very easy. And you have to measure it, a perfected person keeping the Torah. Now, a perfected person, you ask him to sacrifice his son. That's going to be painful. It's going to be difficult to do the Ovdei Avodah Zarah. You ask a perfected person to sit and watch movies all day. That's going to be hard. That's going to be painful. Okay? So, but for a perfected person to live the life of Tariq Mitzvos, nothing. It's a joke. And it's important for a person to realize that, because that's one of the main mechanisms your psyche uses to stop you from changing. Is it projects that initial pain that's going to be there for the first couple weeks, and it projects it to all eternity. And if you think that, it's just not, it's not worth it. It really isn't worth it, because it's not worth being a miserable person the rest of your life. And if life was really that way, the Torah was really that way, it's just not worth it. What's the point? You know, you're not being motivated by, at this point, by simply to do the ratzon of your creator. You're motivated, you want a good life. And you think that learning Torah and doing mitzvah will lead you to a good life. And if it really was as painful as it is in the beginning when you change yourself, that's how your life was going to be, it's not worth it. But that's the trick your psyche plays on you. It makes you think that this is what it's like. But the perfected person does not go through the suffering that you go through when he starts, when he sits down to learn. That's kischok leksil ose asozima v'chach malish tevuna. And that's a pasuk in Mishlei is trying to show you. It's the same thing. It's just like it's a joke. There's no resistance to it. The chachma comes completely naturally to the person who's perfected. And so Moshe Ben is trying to teach you. Mashem shol meimach. What's he asking for you? It's not a big deal. And that's the point of him conveying to you. It is to realize how simple and easy the Torah is once you get there. Okay? Once you get there. The difficulty is in getting there. The difficulty is not intrinsic in the system. It comes from you, an imperfected person, trying to live the life of a perfected person. That's painful. That's difficult. That's burdensome and onerous. But the Torah's theory is by acting like a perfected person and trying to think like a perfected person, you over time will become perfected, and then it will become easy. It will flow naturally. You will restructure your psyche. Your taivos will become different, and it becomes much easier. And it's a few weeks of pain, a few months of pain. The intense pain is the first few days. The pain, it goes away after a few months, and certainly after a few years, it's gone. it gets easier over time. It gets easier over time, much, much easier, until the point where it becomes just as easy to be involved in chachma and staka and chesed, becomes natural for a person, and you change. It's important to know that. It's a critical idea of the Torah. That's what Moshe Ben is trying to tell you, and what Rama is trying to bring out. Why Rama's so focused on how the Torah is an easy, simple system. If a person doesn't know that idea, his psyche is apt to trick him. And that will stop him from changing.
It's easy because it's everything's good, and if a person starts having good habits,
right,
then they're gonna gravitate towards the good.
Keep doing it. Yes, and keep doing it.
It's just a natural phenomenon.
Yeah, once you become accustomed, if you become accustomed to after Marv, you go up and you listen to a shir. That's what you do every night. It's gonna be hard in the beginning, but then it'll become easy. That's one of the reasons why being kovei itim l'Torah is so important. Being kovei itim l'Torah, because once it becomes habitual on your calendar, on your schedule, every time I learn at this point in time, you take away the difficulty of deciding every single time. It becomes habitual. This is when I learn. So it becomes easy. You sit down and learn, because that's the time period you set aside for learning. If you're trying to learn at random times, every time you're trying to choose between watching a movie and learning. Every time is it difficult. You're going to be fighting, constantly fighting. You want to build up habits of perfection. It's the Torah's whole theory, is habits of perfection. You want to change your psyche and change your ways such that that's the way your energy naturally goes, and it will go there. It's going to be hard to change it in the beginning, but once you get there, it'll flow. Okay, and that's the important point. The important thing that Mishlei is trying to show is to compare in this analogy. Between there's nothing intrinsic about the life of Taiva, the Atzos Chatoyim, the fantasy of Taiva, and even the thoughts and the actions of Mitzudos, there's nothing intrinsic about it which makes it easier and simpler and more natural to do. It's not intrinsic. It's based upon the Ksil, the fool, the imperfected person, that he doesn't realize he's harming himself, he doesn't see the consequences. So therefore, he sees he has no resistance to doing it. He has no resistance to doing it because he doesn't see the harm he's going to bring upon himself. But the Chacham, the Ish Tevuna, realizes what's beneficial for himself. He's changed himself. He's perfected himself. And it's just as easy for him to be involved in Chachma because he sees it's a good thing. And he's accustomed himself to learning. And to sit down and hear a shir, to hear some Chachma, no resistance, no problem. Okay, that's the basic idea. Any questions? Come on, Ariel. I'm sure you got something.
I have an unrelated question.
Okay.